Okay, I'd like to convene the finance committee. What we will need to do, Rep. Simbigham, we don't quite have a quorum yet, but what I'll do is have you present the bill, and if you're done and if the members present have no further questions, we'll display it over temporarily until we have a quorum. But I would like to get through as much of the agenda this morning as we can. We, again, have a fairly extensive agenda, committee members. So if you could present the bill, and then we'll take care of motions later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Also, Representative Garofalo is a co-chief author on this with me, and so he's on your committee, I understand. So if he has any questions, he can also answer them at a later date. But House File 45 actually does not have a...
I probably will ask you to stay around, though, until we finish the bill.
Absolutely. House File 45 actually does no longer have a fiscal note on it. I did amend it in Transportation Finance to take out the fiscal cost. But currently, if somebody is driving carelessly and that accident results in a death, there are two options. One, a felony, and you have to prove gross negligence. Or two, it's a misdemeanor, which is the equivalent of running a stop sign or a red light. And so what this bill aims to do is create a middle ground of a gross misdemeanor. And it is supported by the Minnesota Council on Safe Driving, the Minnesota County Attorney Association, Abate, and the St. Croix Valley Riders, who all have testified in previous committees. So with that, I would stand for questions. There's a lot of co-authors, very bipartisan. There have been recent news stories about this, and it's a very good bill and good policy.
Okay. Are there any questions, Representative Bingham?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bingham, did you say gross misdemeanor?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I support this. They've been trying for this for a long time, and I think it's time, more than time. Too many people don't see them.
Okay, and Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So, Representative Bingham, you would be proposing to create a new crime for which punishment would follow, and you're suggesting there's no cost?
That is the case, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick is in the audience, and the fiscal note has no cost to it.
Representative Skins. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, as I mentioned earlier, we still don't quite have a quorum, so Representative Bingham, if you can remain until we take care of the motions in a few moments, and then we'll go then to the next bill on the agenda. I think Representative Nelson. Yeah.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson, you probably heard we don't have a quorum, but we're dealing with the presentation of the bills, and both caucuses have representatives here. So, Representative Nelson, if you could walk us through the bill, and then you could remain for a few moments, and then we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1849 is a mandate reduction bill for local governments, and I do have an amendment, but we'll have to put that on. And what the amendment does is in Section 3 of the bill, we thought we had fixed it in government operations, and then there were some problems with it, and the groups, the interested parties got together after government operations and came up with a solution, and that's what the solution is, what is found in the A4 amendment of 1849, and what it does is it moves the contest for an election to the Office of Administrative Hearings and moves the money there for it. That's part of the money part of this was taken care of in Representative Kahn's omnibus government operations bill, and so the fiscal cost is carried there and is already accounted for in the target. But what the bill does is it basically, I'll walk through the bill, is in Section 1 of the bill, it provides for it. If we pass rules or government agencies pass rules that affect local governments, that we're asking them to make them effective twice a year instead of all the way through the year. So either July or January that the new rules would take effect. That way local governments would only have to deal with changing their ordinances twice a year instead of they could be having something change every month. And so this is to help them save costs. Section 2 of the bill dealt with best value contracting. When we passed that last session, we limited it to twice a year or limited to the number of contracts. It was, the idea was when we passed that was to allow it to cities to be able to learn how to walk with it before they ran with it, and the local governments have done a good job with this, and they would like to be able to do this more often, because sometimes if they have to decide which ones they're going to use best value on, if they use it right away, they may end up with a project later in the year that they have to do, they would like to do it with, and they've already used up their opportunity. Section 3 and Section 6 are about abandonment of cemeteries. One is for counties and one is for townships. And permits counties that have taken over funerals or abandoned cemeteries to prohibit further burials in the cemetery. Excuse me here. Section 4 increases from $5,000 to $10,000 the amount of construction development rate related to fees collected by municipalities and has been included in a report to the Department of, that are included in a report to the Department of Labor and Industry. Section 5 is the most compelling part of this. It's compensation of fence viewers, which I didn't know what they were until I got into this. But it strikes a $60 cap on fence viewers and allows townships and town boards to recover the cost that they have of that and assess it back to the property owners involved. Section 6 we already talked about. Section 7 is fixed by allows counties to reduce their salaries in times like we are now to save costs and effective the day after enactment. Section 8 has to do with small claims. It raises the amount from $300 to $2,000 that on small claims that have to be published in local newspapers, thereby saving the counties and the townships money. Section 9 is removes the appeal process for the county clerk. It's already taken care of in other parts of law. Section 10, and if a county commissioner permits them to lower their salaries in times of fiscal crisis like we are now. Section 11 through 16 removes the minimum salary provisions for county auditors, county treasurers, county recorders, county sheriffs, and allows for temporary reduction of salaries for city council members. Section 17 through 19 deal with updates for the thresholds for contracts for day labor and for HRA bonds, and it just raises the threshold and it ties it to existing statute under the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law. So it takes it out of this section and it just references the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law. Section 20 adds Anoka and Dakota to the metro cities that no longer have to have land use planning for unincorporated territories within their counties, and it's like the other metro counties. Section 21 strikes the $10 booking fee and allows the county to recover the actual cost of booking. 22 are the repealers, and you've got the repeals of sections related to county facilities groups requirements, related to county auditor minimum salaries, again, the treasurer recorded minimum salaries, the sheriff minimum salaries, and Section 471, which deals with, or Section 471 of statute that deals with state travel policy. And that's the bill.
Representative Nelson, members, I'm not sure that the summary matches the sections, what you were describing. The numbers didn't seem to match what you were describing, just to alert people.
I think that's because Section 3 was
added. Did the amendment change that? Or?
I think the amendment changed that, and I think the amendment we didn't go off changed that. It added Section 3 in. So I guess that's...
There's no there.
Mr. Chair, what the committee has before it is the first engrossment, and it's off by just a section from what Representative Nelson described.
Yeah, I was able to follow what you were saying. It was just when you referenced the numbers, they didn't match.
I think that's because Section 3 was added in government operation.
To alert folks. Any questions of Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair.
And we're still a little short of the quorum. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative, your bill provides for either the elimination, modification, or suspension of certain statutory required mandates on local governments. Will this, if bill is passed, save or cost local governments?
The feeling is from the local, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the feeling is from local governments. These are the mandates that we work on with them. They feel it will save them costs, not a large, significant amount of cost. They don't know what it is, but some of it's just stuff that they have to do that they won't have to do anymore, that so they'll have to be able to use their people to do other things.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Well, is there a provision for trailing that and finding out and accounting for it so that when cities come back and request something somewhere else, will you be able to tell and book and account for the savings, and if there is savings, how much?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the counties and the townships are fuzzy on that, and they've been, I've asked that question too, and they've been fuzzy on, they don't exactly know. A lot of these have been mandates that, but the best value contracting is one where they think they can save some money, but they don't know what the costs are, they don't know if they'll be able to track them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith, and maybe Representative Pawlowski can chime in, but several years ago, he was the chief author, and we had a special committee in higher education on mandate reduction. And there were times when we were very aware that there would be savings, but sometimes it was very difficult to book exactly what they might be, as you brought about more efficiency. I don't know if Representative Pawlowski has anything to add to that, but it kind of chimes into the question you were asking of Representative Nelson.
No, Mr. Chair, just that the Minsky Central Office has wiped out all of the mandate reductions we did 10 years ago. That would be my only observation.
And maybe we should revisit some of that, Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, I think if we don't this session, it would be a discredit to the state.
In fact, at that time, quite honestly, some of our greatest difficulties were with some of the bureaucracy. And one of the things that was very helpful was that Governor Carlson had bought in at the time in terms of wanting to see certain things achieved. And his staff was helpful working with some of the other state agencies as we worked on that. But okay, we're now at a quorum. Okay, I'll officially convene the meeting, and then after we finish the questions, then we'll take a series of motions on your bill and reverse back to Representative Bingham. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Nelson, the fiscal note ends up with a zero cost or savings for the state, but I do notice that the revenue is coming from the administrative hearing fund. Is the administrative hearing fund funded? Is it through a fee? Is it fee-based? And is there an increase in the fees charged so that there is the dollars there to siphon off?
I'm not sure. I think the fund, the general fund, is fiscal analyst should be able to help me with that or phone a friend.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, can I do that?
Yep.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I'm not very familiar with this, but in the fiscal note, it does look like there's an assessment that's done against the general fund appropriation to the general account of the state elections campaign fund. So I'm not sure that there are fees involved, but I can find out and get back to you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
And just one more point with that. One thing that the bill is doing, that Representative Kahn's bill did, is that, and to make this work, is by putting it there, they're making, instead of an annual appropriation to the OEH, they're doing a biennial, because the election stuff happens and one part of it, and they would run out of money. By making a biennial, they're able to use the money And then they said that they'd be able to use the money, what they had enough money there, so it's not an increase in funding to them. It's just, by making a biennial appropriation, they're able to take care of it within their office.
Any additional questions? Being that we now have a quorum present, then I'll move the House File 1849, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. And then you did have the author's amendment A4. So the chair will move the A4 amendment. And any discussion on the amendment? The author went over both the bill and the amendment earlier. Seeing no discussion, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill then as amended? Representative Tiffmeyer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative, on the amendment, line 1.21, cost assessed, it's a significant change, it appears to me, from what was in the original bill as presented. It appears as though it's being changed to the Office of Administrative Hearings. Am I reading that correctly, or did I just miss something? That's a
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And so instead of the jurisdiction, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's correct. That's part of the cost reduction to the counties and the townships and the cities. And the Office of Administrative Hearing, I have an email here from them because before I put this amendment on, I wanted to make sure they were all there. And Bruce Johnson from the Office of Administrative Hearing, they are in complete agreement with the amendment. On behalf of Chief Judge Krause, we are grateful for your assistance resolving this issue and the way that it's interested all parties is what he emailed me back. So they're in agreement with the way it's being done.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Colbert.
There's a little bit of a discussion whether or not, since this amendment was adopted, have you adopted A4?
Yeah.
Whether or not that has taken out the $9,000 cost of this. And can we have some clarification from this?
Representative Nelson, did you hear the question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Solberg. My understanding that it takes out the cost because the money that's a part of this, that's fund that's already part of their budget, it's just like they're shifting it to a biennial budget, so there should be no cost to the bill.
Representative Solberg?
I do have the fiscal note in front of me. I haven't reviewed that part. Can you tell me where that might appear?
The money for this was carried in Representative Kahn's government operations bill.
Mr. Chair, let's let it go there, and we'll handle it very quickly in Ways and Means. Then we can
the motion was, of course, because it originally had the cost to go to Ways and Means, that you'd still like to see it.
Yeah, why don't we do that, and we'll just make sure it's handled quickly.
Very good. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then the chair renews his motion that House File 1849, the first committee engrossment, as amended, be passed and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
And now we'll revert back to Representative Bigham's bill. And she, for the members that weren't here at the very beginning, she's already presented the bill. Representative Champion, would you care to make a couple of motions?
Yes. Yes, I will. First of all, I'd like to move the Transportation Finance Division report for House Files number 45, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Champion.
I move House Files number 45, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
Okay, and are there any further questions then of Representative Bigham? Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at this fiscal note and it reminds me of the fiscal note for when we went from 0.10 to 0.08 for automatic determination of driving while intoxicated. And I recall sitting on what was then, I think, Ways and Means, and Mr. Camp had said it would be a negligible increase in jail beds. And now, at last count, I think there were 688, or no, that was four DWI felonies. And, you know, I don't know how you can have a bill like this, and it's not going to. I see they're saying up to three jail beds per year more, which I think it's pretty expensive to keep something in jail, isn't it? So, Representative Solberg, you're worrying about $9,000 for a bottom line and, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 a year for a jail bed. That's $100,000, but there's no fiscal note. I can guarantee you folks that this will be kind of like the hospital, as we call it, at Moose Lake, and the four DWI felony, that we're going to have more of our jails loaded. But what really gets me is we keep taking, you know, I thought justice was the ability of a judge to look at each individual case and determine what was just or not, and we keep putting things in statute to take the ability of the judge to look at a particular circumstance and apply justice. So, you know, I'm going to vote against this bill because it's another bad idea by Representative Bigham, simply and plainly put, who seems bent on filling our jails and doing background checks and everything else. I still have that libertarian streak in me, I'm sorry, but I'm just fearful of this bill and the implications it could have on somebody. I see falling asleep at the wheel as an example. Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure nobody gets in a vehicle and attempts to fall asleep so they can hurt somebody. But sometimes when you're working a double shift up in a mine and they force you to work overtime, and if you fall asleep in your car, it's no fault of your own having been forced to work overtime, and now you can end up being charged with a gross misdemeanor and ending up in jail when it's bad enough what's going through your mind that the accident happened in the first place. So I'm hoping that Representative Tamar will jump in here and stick up, help me out on this one, because I just can't believe the bills that get through to this committee.
Representative Tamar. Mr. Just a brief comment. I know how hard Representative Bigham has worked on this bill over the years, and I understand. I believe she had a constituent or someone who was killed in her district, and you know, the fact of the matter is there's lots of accidents that happen on our highways. They're accidents. And there's a distinct difference and our prosecutors have the ability to charge an individual for a vehicular homicide in a number of different degrees if they believe that someone has heedlessly acted in the disregard of the rights of others. So, I mean, we have statutes on the books. What this is going to do is say, if you get into an accident, you could be charged with a gross misdemeanor, and that's not an easy thing. And while there's not a significant impact on state prison resources, if you look at page 13 of the fiscal note, you'll see that there's a significant probation caseload increase to 28 offenders. So I know, Representative Bigham, you've worked hard on this. I understand your intent is good here, but we're criminalizing an accident that happens on our highways a lot, and you know my position on this. I disagree with you and respectfully, and I'm going to vote no also.
Representative Bigham, did you want to respond?
Yes, just real briefly. It has to be a chargeable crime. So an accident, you know, we would go through our process that we have set up now. If it's not a chargeable crime, no one would be going to jail. And right now people are dying and they walk away with and being killed for driving carelessly for one reason or another. And their families are told it's the same as running a stop sign. So I think it's a good middle ground. A lot of people support it bipartisanly, but also you know, it has to be a chargeable crime. So I don't want people thinking that, you know, grandma bumps into a car and somebody dies and she's going to prison. It's just not going to happen.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then the motion by Representative Champion is renewed that House File 45, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion defeated. Okay, thank you. The next bill would be Senate File 1408 by Representative Hansen, dealing with aircraft cockpits secured against lasers. Representative Tamar.
Chair, I would move Senate File 1408 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Representative Hansen, would you care to go over the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This bill passed out of Representative Hillstrom's committee and was referred to Representative Tamar's committee, but the fiscal note, in anticipation that there might be a fiscal cost, it came back that there was no fiscal cost, and so then it's been recalled. What this is, it makes a crime for a person who knowingly aims and discharges a laser at the cockpit of an aircraft while taking off, landing, or in flight. And the reason I have this bill here today is we do not have a state law against this. I have a constituent who's here, and I know you don't take testimony, but in case there were questions, I have Trooper Jim Anglin, who's also on the City Council in West St. Paul. And last year, in the course of his duties, he had the simple lasers that you can buy at a hardware store were fired at his plane, and they did arrest the person, tried to go to federal court to charge that person, and that did not work. The U.S. attorney did not prosecute. And so if you have questions about the seriousness of this thing, I do have him available. But the Senate has passed it. That's why you have the Senate file in front of you. It did pass the Representative Hillstrom's committee, and there is not a fiscal cost.
And when we talk about testimony, the reason that we generally don't, that's done in division. This one didn't happen to go to division, so if you'd like to comment, I didn't get your name, however.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Anglin, E-N-E-L-I-N.
Okay. Yes, why don't you comment briefly about the situations that you've encountered then?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill fills a hole, really. It fills a hole between the lack of a federal statute, an applicable federal statute, and the fact that we just don't have anything like it in state statute. What Representative Hansen is talking about is just what he said, just the simple ways that you can buy at Office Max. It's you can see it on the back wall here. If I were to shine it at the camera, I could probably blind out the camera here. But just that little beam right there is powerful enough for a 10-mile visual range. And, in fact, when I bought this particular laser, it actually describes itself as the most powerful legal green laser pointer available. I mean, it's as simple as a 2-3 AAA batteries that fit inside of this laser. With the help of YouTube, in about 4 minutes, I can turn this laser into one that can pop a balloon at 30 feet and extend its range out to about 40 miles. So it is a serious offense. And what happens is that when it is discharged at an aircraft, or in my case it was a helicopter, we were on routine patrol over North Minneapolis, and someone discharged the laser at us. We were at altitude of approximately 1,000 feet above the ground, low and slow, which is our normal routine patrolling area. And what happens is it makes the windscreen opaque. It fills the cockpit with a green light. The instruments become unreadable. And it's much the same as if you were to take a flash bulb from a camera and blast it in your face, only magnified a couple of different times. Now, if we were to do that in this room, you'd blink your eyes a few times, you may be mad at me, but it would go away. With a laser, specifically one of these that are so pinpoint, and because of the low and slow nature of our routine patrol, it's easy to target that aircraft, and in my particular case, it did directly hit me in the eyes. We were the first crew, helicopter crew actually, in the nation that was able to actually land at the scene and arrest the party. Party admitted to what he had done. And subsequently, the FBI was called, the FAA was involved, Department of Homeland Security got involved. It was quite a night. And in the end, the U.S. Attorney General's office out of Minneapolis decided not to prosecute because as a crew and as an aircraft, we did not fit the definition underneath the federal statute. Since that time, there has been a successful prosecution underneath the Patriot Act, the Federal Patriot Act, but only because California, and this was in California, only because California already had an applicable laser law on its books. In doing the research for it, most incidents of laser prosecution have come from either city, local ordinances, or state statutes, and that's the reason for the bill in front of you today. So, there was an attempt to fill this hole on the federal level by Representative Keller, Representative Forbes, Florida and Virginia, back in May of 2007, but it didn't receive a Senate companion bill, and so when that Congress adjourned, it never made it into federal law, so there is that hole. Now, there is the federal law that protects commercial airliners, the larger passenger commercial airliners, and unfortunately, with the definition in the rush after the 9/11 attacks, the definitions just didn't ever evolve into thinking about corporate aircraft, smaller type aircraft like the State Patrol, like the Air National Guard with their aircraft, with news gathering agencies. None of those aircraft would have been covered underneath the federal bill. So that's why the bill is before you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Officer, could you give us a little more background? So when you landed, who did you apprehend? Was it a prank? Was it a kid? Or was it a terrorist?
Officer England. Mr. Chair, Representative, it happened to be somebody who was working at a foundry and out for a smoke break and saw our helicopter flying over and specifically targeted our aircraft because it was flying over. It was just a worker, but he knew what he had done, and when we interviewed him, he knew what he did was wrong. He knew it was dangerous.
So I got to make a decision here today. If he's charged with a felony, this person, the next time, or the next time some kid does something stupid like this, then, officer, do you think that person should go to jail for a year or 2 years or 3 years or whatever the penalty is going to be?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, when in a situation when you're 1,000 feet above the ground, it can take you less than 2 seconds to crash that helicopter. So, yeah, the seriousness, I believe, is there. And prank or no prank, should this pass, the intent is to do a media blitz to let people know that the law is now there, that it is dangerous, what can happen, what the results can happen. So in looking at it in terms of the fact that I can die in a matter of a couple of seconds over a prank, I think it's serious enough to warrant the felony. Yes, sir, I do.
Any further discussion? Representative Champion.
President
Champion, could you speak into the mic? Thank you.
How many instances have you encountered where someone has used a laser to sort of shoot up towards your aircraft?
My personal incidents in that have been two. The State Patrol suffered three such incidents last year, and at least two, if I recall them properly, in 2007. But that's just my own, our small little unit.
And I, I understand from your testimony that you had the opportunity to land and have a discussion with the person who did it. Why were you able to do that in your situation and the other two instances they were unable to do so?
Officer England.
Mr. Representative, one of the incidents happened over a populated area where there was just no location to land. The other one happened at WeFest, and again, the location was just impossible to try and land. In my particular case, we were over in North Minneapolis. There was a large parking lot in which we could do that. We knew where the laser was coming from, and with the help of Minneapolis PD, we were able to arrest that party.
One last question, and can you tell me where that was? Because I represent North Minneapolis, mm-hmm. So I would like to know where that was and how, and why it was okay, you know, to land an aircraft in North Minneapolis.
Officer English.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the reason for landing was not to precipitate the arrest. We had Minneapolis PD on the ground. The reason for the landing was to allow my eyes to adjust before we continued the flight. We landed directly over. It was at the Shaw Lumber There's a foundry right next to Shaw Lumber, and I don't have where the address is right there.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was listening to my friend, Representative Rukavina, and his concern. I would just make three points. I support the bill and I vote for it, and I think it's needed. The first is looking at the fiscal note on the sentencing guidelines. I'm not an expert on the sentencing guidelines, but the information here and my suspicion is that certainly in the case of the worker who didn't sound like he had a past criminal history, would have gotten probation, would have come in under the watchful eye of our probation folks. It also says that the offense would occur infrequently, and that while it's possible someone may receive a prison sentence, most offenders would get probation. So I don't think people will be slapped necessarily in prison. Secondly, a reason to support this is we hire men like this witness to protect us and defend our public safety, and I think they need the protection of not having people shining a flashlight in their face and with the potential of crashing and being killed and or crashing into a home. And the third reason, I live out in the Lake Minnetonka area. I'm an inlander. I don't have to pay for the lake, but I see it. And we have a lot of hospital flyovers to Waconia Hospital. I'd say on a daily basis, we have at least one and sometimes several low-flying helicopters going over the lake, either delivering patients to the hospital or looking for folks who have trouble out in the water late at night. And I would hate to think that someone in a hospital helicopter gets brought down by a flashlight trying to get to safety and potential landing in one of the homes in that community. I need all the voters I can get, so I'm going to support this bill.
Mr. Smith, I thought there was 1 year where you were unopposed, but...
Say again?
I thought there was 1 year when you were unopposed when you referenced all the voters you can get, but maybe that wasn't every year. Representative Chikipian.
One last thing that I am a little concerned about, I definitely concur that safety is the order of the day, and I am one who really believes in that. But I'm balancing that also with this notion of a felony. And even though Representative Smith, you so eloquently articulated, you know, they might get probation, there's no prison sentence, but there's some other collateral sanctions that I think this committee should really be concerned about when we think in terms of this bill. For an example, if a person has a felony, that would challenge their ability to even find gainful employment. Secondly, it would challenge their ability to even find shelter, because most applications require you to disclose if you have a felony. And now there's a move towards if you have a felony that you may not be eligible for certain loans or grants and those other things. So even though this is important, and even though they may, if it was a first offense, that they would receive, you know, a presumption of probation, there are the other collateral sanctions that I think we need to be very mindful of when we think in terms of something of this nature. So it does remind me of that kid who might do something that he or she is not supposed to, or someone does something that they're not supposed to. And we definitely want to protect the law enforcement. But at the same time, we have to balance these competing interests that I think we must do so in real time. So I'm a little apprehensive around voting for this, especially if it will create another felony. If it was a gross misdemeanor or something very serious that we could even escalate, that is something that I would be amenable to.
Officer England, you said that the individual, when you cited that example of North Minneapolis, was arrested. Can you tell us what he was charged with then, under current law?
Mr. Chair, he wasn't charged with a thing.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
He wasn't charged with a thing.
Okay, he was arrested but no charge. Okay.
That's correct.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, I guess I was just going to kind of say what Representative Sampson just said, and that is to start with a felony. I mean, you know, we hear a lot about felonies, and I was we've made a lot of felonies here recently, and it's just, you know, you think you could start a little bit lower on the criminal scale here, because a lot of these are going to be pranks, and you know, throw the words out Homeland Security and the Patriot Act, and it kind of irritates me because there's no terrorism here. It was a dumb prank. And we make it out to be like, you know, something, if I vote against this, I'm unpatriotic or something, as I'm voting against the Patriot Act, you know. Well, I'm going to be unpatriotic again here because I think this is just going a little too overboard. I think we could look at a lesser sentence for the first time when somebody does something stupid, because I think most of these are going to be kids. Most of them are going to be kids that have done it. And officer, you yourself said, I don't know how you're going to, at Wee Fest, how you're going to land a helicopter to catch anybody that does it, you know, or in a populated area. So it's just one more thing where the judge, again, can't get any leeway and has to charge the person with a felony.
Any further discussion? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. I'm just stuck with kind of the difficulty of, you know, you said you're going to do a big media or something so people will know about it, and I understand that. It's that kind of double-edged thing, like the more people know, I mean, I had no idea that this could be so dangerous, that it could cause a cockpit to become virtually the unreadable, the various thousand phones. So I'm just thinking, you know, it's almost like, I just wanted to ask you to think about that, how you're going to do that, because it could be used, you know, for a more difficult. It could be used as an act of terrorism against, you know, major airplanes and so on, apparently. So I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking about that, and even though maybe in most cases it wouldn't be, that seems like that it is an unknown weapon that now will be more known.
I happen to be listening carefully to this. I have an airport in my district, Crystal Airport, and I also have a hospital, North Memorial, when Representative Smith was talking about the hospital out there, or out this way. North Memorial has a lot of helicopter flights in and out that go over both Representative Champion's district, because it's right on the border there between Minneapolis and Robbinsdale. Kind of like you, Representative Clark, I was totally unaware of the issue until the other day when I talked to the author about the bill when we were getting ready to be scheduled. So it's a brand new issue from my perspective as well. Representative Kahn.
I was actually going to make the same point that Representative Clark made. I'd never heard of it either, and suddenly you get a whole bunch of dumb kids thinking this might be a neat thing to do. So.
That is one of those issues where you wonder how much publicity there should be, because sometimes kids do things they shouldn't simply because they've heard about it, I think. You know,
and I also agree with the people who have talked about, do you really need to start with a felony?
Kamer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, what do you think about having this be a gross misdemeanor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kamer.
Representative Hansen.
I think that this is a very important issue. If the committee would want to move that to a gross misdemeanor so that we can start trying to protect folks, I am fine with that.
It's not a lengthy bill. If Ms. Novak, could you identify? I'm assuming that somebody would like to make that motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion on line 1.19, after the word A, gross misdemeanor, delete everything after. Line 119 and 120.
Okay, everybody have the PAMR motion? Okay, the motion is before us to amend. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing none, then Representative Paymar. Representative Paymar renews his motion that Senate File 1408 be recommended to pass as amended and placed in the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we now Representative Grapple.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we move on the agenda, if I could just have a quick conversation with the committee. I was late this morning. It's my understanding that House File 45 was defeated by this committee. And based on the custom and usage of this committee, I'm looking at the fiscal note. I looked at it last night. There's no finance connotation to the bill. And I'm trying to figure out what the purview of this committee is to reject a bill, which, based on the custom and usage, would pretty much be a referral. There's no financial connotation in the bill. And I'm just trying to, again, Mr. Chairman, my apologies, I wasn't here this morning, I had family obligations, but I'm trying to figure out what happened, and I'm wondering...
Mr. Grapple, I don't know what you mean by custom and usage, but the bill was appropriately before us, and there had to be a motion to move it out of committee. That motion failed, and it was a rather strong vote.
Yes, well, Mr. Chairman, I know in the past we've done referrals where I have heard the chairman say, well, this is a bill we're just passing along. It's got to go out the way it came in. Mr. Chairman, it's not directed at you. I want to be very clear here for the members of the committee. I'm trying to figure out what the purview of this committee is. This is the Finance Committee. At least that's what it says on the website. And the bill has no fiscal note. You can't argue it has a financial connotation. It is 100% policy. And Representative Bingham's bill, from what I'm hearing, gets shot down. And I'm trying to figure out how the purview of this committee could possibly justify that. And it sounds like it was a bipartisan vote, Mr. Chairman. So I'd like to know what exactly is going on here.
The bill was referred to the Finance Committee by the Policy Committee. There was not a fiscal note at the time it was in the Policy Committee. And in case there was fiscal impact, they chose to refer it here. The motion before the committee was to recommend it to pass, and that motion happened to fail. The others that were before us also would have had a motion to pass them. There may have been limited discussion, but on this one there happened to be a fair amount of discussion, and the motion was defeated.
And Mr. Chairman, I respect that.
In all other instances, there was a motion to pass them,
and
those were favorably, I think, in most instances that you're probably referring to, acted upon favorably.
And Mr. Chairman, no disrespect is intended to the chairman or onto the process.
I'm just explaining to you that once the motion to recommend the bill to pass is before us, it's voted upon. And when that vote fails, then the bill fails.
Mr. Chairman, my point is, and to the members of the committee, this is the Finance Committee. And if this is the House Floor Committee where we're going to be doing everything, I thought things got a little bit out of control yesterday, but this has no financial connotation.
Yeah.
It's zero. The only reason it came to this committee is because the original version of the bill had a fiscal note, which was addressed through the committee process. This is supposed to just be a handoff. There's no oversight for this committee in the subject matter of this committee.
I have to be corrected. It did have a fiscal note. I thought it didn't. It did have a fiscal note when it came here. The Transportation Committee, that was one that went to division, and the Transportation Committee amended out the fiscal cost and re-referred it to the Co-Finance Committee. There was a motion to recommend that it pass. The motion failed.
And
so that's it in a nutshell.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand that, but there are no financial connotations to it any longer. And I'm wondering, and I don't want to have a protracted conversation, Mr. Chairman, and I suspect you wouldn't let me have one anyway, but what are the limits of this committee's jurisdiction? We have a bill. I mean, folks, just look at the fiscal note. It is zero. And it's not like it's a minority party's member. So it's a member from your majority party with no financial connotation, and the Finance Committee is shooting it down. On what basis? What are the limitations for this committee?
You missed some of the discussion. There was concern that there could have been some fiscal impact due to the penalty that was in the bill. I can't tell you why people chose to vote against it, but there was discussion about the penalty and what that would have cost potentially, even though the fiscal note showed zero. Unfortunately, you weren't here for the discussion.
Right. Well, it sounds like we're rewriting fiscal notes now, too. This committee is really getting out of control. On a bipartisan basis, the fiscal notes aren't good enough?
If you want a further discussion, that's fine, but House File 1088 by Representative Swales is now before us.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Well. Representative Champion.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1088 be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Swales, if you'd explain the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Members, this particular bill would prohibit the use of administrative penalties, chiefly continuances for dismissal, days of adjudication, and the expungement process insofar as they permit moving violations and certain other offenses from reaching or remaining on the record of commercial motor vehicle drivers. Minnesota has been cited by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration as non-compliant with federal safety regulations because some of its practices allow the masking of moving violations committed by commercial driver's license holders and by operators of commercial motor vehicles who do not have a valid commercial driver's license. With continuances for dismissal and stays of adjudication, convictions for these violations never appear on the driving record. In the case of an expungement, the conviction is removed from the record. By permitting the practices of continuances for dismissal, stays of adjudication, and expungement for these offenses, the true safety records of commercial motor vehicle drivers are masked, therefore putting public safety in peril. Under federal law, which is cited in Minnesota statutes, commercial driver's license holders may be disqualified for certain moving violations or for combinations thereof. Minnesota could lose 5 or 10% of its federal highway funding if it does not halt masking practices, 5% following the first year of noncompliance and 10% in subsequent years. A 5% sanction could translate into a loss of approximately $23 million in highway funds for Minnesota, and a 10% sanction could translate into a loss of approximately $46 million in highway funds for Minnesota. The supporters of this legislation include the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, and if you have specific questions related to the bill, Commissioner McCormick is here to answer those questions.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none then, Representative Champion renews his motion that House File 1088 be recommended to pass and placed in the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Swales, you have House File 1665.
Yes.
Representative Kahn. Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I'm going to pass 1665, the second continuing version, we recommend it to pass, and then refer to the committee on ways and means.
Okay, the motion is before us, Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's truly a pleasure to sit here with this committee to introduce to you House File 1665. This particular file was the result of many weeks of hard work with the co-chair of our work group, Representative McFarland. In the Education Finance Committee, we were asked by Chair Greiling to be the leaders of a work group that looked at shared services and procurement for the state and to see how we could do that efficiently through the education area. So Representative McFarland and I decided to start looking at not only how can we share services, but we heard very clearly from the stakeholders around the state that many, many services were currently being shared very effectively. And so we decided that our work group would examine the various strands of where shared services would be effective in the area of education. The first week we looked at food services, and we found that already across the state there is a cooperative group It's a food purchasing group that is housed in the Anoka-Hennepin School District. It includes 77 school districts all the way from Moorhead down to the most southernmost counties of the state. And the savings for this particular food group is, food purchasing group is massive. Then the second week we looked at IT, and we were very interested in the research we had been doing and in talking with the Humphrey Institute, realizing that a lot of work in the area of IT is happening nationally. The state of Wyoming and the state of Oklahoma have what's called an interoperability framework that they are using. It saves in the tens of millions of dollars, connecting school districts across those states. Both horizontally and vertically within their own silos of the needs that they have in terms of IT. And so then we looked at what's going on here in Minnesota in that area and discovered that through the Department of Education and also through some of the service cooperatives that we have in the state, TIES, the Southwest Service Cooperative, and so forth, that we have a lot of experimentation and work going on. At a recent education policy committee meeting, we had a presentation by the Education Commission of the state, and they are already looking at ways that they can be of assistance in helping our state and others be able to achieve that goal. The next week, we looked at transportation issues, and we not only looked at routing systems that are in current use, but we talked about other states, such as the state of North Carolina, that has a central routing system, and we looked at how they are saving many, many thousands and thousands of dollars by being able to make more efficient bus routes for their students, but realizing that Minnesota has some unique obstacles, such as open enrollment, those kinds of things that create some routing issues. And then Representative McFarland and I were invited to go to Marshall, Minnesota, which is Representative Seifert's hometown, and that is also the headquarters of the Southwest Service Cooperative. And we went to listened as 30 of the superintendents who are members of that particular cooperative shared with us the successes that they are experiencing there in their cooperative, but also realizing that they are a model of what could be very, very effective on a statewide basis. So our work together on this created this bill. It's very simple in format. We went to the state auditor, or looking at statute, we discovered that the state auditor's office is already doing some of this work. And so our bill is very simple in nature. It is not a mandate, but what it allows is the state auditor's office to create a best practices network for procurement and sharing services that would be available to all school districts. The state auditor was so intrigued and happy with this particular provision that she said it would not cost a dime more to extend this to other units of government. And so this website now would be available for cities, townships, and counties in addition to school districts. Representative McFarland is also here, and she, if we have time, Mr. Chair, could just briefly talk.
We have time, and I was going to ask her if she cared to comment.
Okay, so thank you.
Representative McFarland.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to allude to the fact that we looked at the state auditor's report of best practices review from 2004, which was cooperative efforts in public service delivery, and a 2000 report of best practices review for contracting for services and procurement. We know the state has a procurement site, and I think this our site would also be linking to that state site so others would know about it. TIES did a report for us. We had 75% of the school districts respond, showing all the shared services that are currently happening. And also one that that I find very interesting is the St. Paul Chamber has for the past 5 to 6 years been researching shared services and procurement and has a report. We don't have very many because they're almost to the tail end. but it shows shared services and procurement that is done between the cities and the county and school districts within Ramsey County. And it's quite detailed. And what we're finding is that it just reinforces the fact that many school districts, cities, and the county are already doing shared services, and this confirms it. And information like this would be available on the website that we're talking about.
Representative,
I just wanted to say that we have received strong support from the Minnesota School Boards Association, the professional, I can't remember the acronym for it, but an MREA, and we also have just really been supported by practically every entity in the education area, and MASO, yes. So.
Okay, there are several people with questions. Representative Diskins is first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swales, is there anything currently in law that would prohibit the state auditor from establishing this online clearinghouse and or asking other units of government to assist in funding it?
There's not, Mr. Chair and Representative Diskins, there's nothing in statute that would prohibit that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to encourage the members of the committee to support this bill. Representative Swales and McFarland are two great examples of bipartisan cooperation and work in a pragmatic way to improve a situation we often, it seems, in this legislature go immediately to mandates. Thinking that people at the local level somehow do not have the economic or incentive or the brains to do these things on their own. And so I'm very encouraged that this new idea, not a new idea, but an expanded one, starts with the assumption that voluntary activity on the part of school boards and others can actually make a difference. And it's inexpensive. It encourages and supports local control, and it's just a very good bill, so I want to congratulate the two who have worked so well on this proposal.
Thank you, Representative Rocavino.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it's good proposal too, but it reminds me that there was a State Board of Innovation and Cooperation in fact run by my former committee administrator, who is now the Deputy Secretary of State, Jim Gelbman, and I think this was disbanded. I don't know why, and maybe Representative Kahn can help me out with a little history on it as to why it was disbanded and maybe what good that board did while it was in operation.
Do you recall?
I think it was a change of administration that did that and decided that innovation and cooperation wasn't the newest thing that we needed. I did think they were really good examples of cost saving. And they had an ability which was kind of neat, which might fit into the mandate reduction. They had the ability to actually suspend rules that had been done. You could go to the Board of Innovation and Cooperation and get a mandate lifted or rules lifted at least until the next legislative session. And, Sarah?
I think we should give them that authority here.
Representative Rukavina, I didn't hear.
Mr. Chair, maybe we should give that authority here, but this is a auditor's. I don't want to give the auditor that authority, but.
Okay, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to both Representatives McFarland and Swales, thanks a lot for bringing this bill forward. It's a great idea. I just have a question about some of the other, how this compares to some of the other proposals we've seen. I know that. I'm glad you have the sample sheet here from the Anoka Hennepin School District. My understanding is that some of these proposals, and I believe Representative Winkler's and Senator Bonoff's and maybe some others, arose from the fact that apparently, if I understand the story correctly, somebody at the Anoka Hennepin School District pointed out that they had the technology and the ability, if they wanted to do the payroll for all the school districts in the state of Minnesota. And the question arose, do we really need hundreds of payroll departments in several school districts? Could we farm this out or contract this out to one big one like Anoka Hennepin and realize savings that way? Is there a way in which you think, and I know this is just, it's advisory, it's not mandatory, but is there a way in which you found that that kind of thing might be useful? In other words, not just sharing the services, but maybe combining them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, one of the things that we did discover in this journey together is that the service cooperatives that we have around the state, and I believe there are 11 service cooperatives that we have, particularly in rural Minnesota, they are currently doing a lot of this sharing. They're sharing payroll, they're sharing speech pathologists, school counselors, school psychologists, they're common curriculum directors, and in some districts, they're sharing superintendents. So that kind of work is already going on, and what we discovered was the extent to which it is going on, and that for us was eye-opening. All of us want, and you know, you hear the saying, oh, we're just throwing money down a black hole when we give money to education. But what we found as we traveled together and talked to stakeholders from around the state, they care deeply about efficiency. They care deeply about being able to save dollars. What we are trying to provide is a best practices network so those districts that are not being successful can look at other models of how these things are being done across the state. Now, Chair Greiling, just so I can add to that, has asked us to continue on during the interim. And we feel like this is just the beginning point. Representative McFarland and I are committed to continue to address the stakeholders. I didn't mention that we even talked to the unions about some of this. We had SEIU commenting. We are really trying to pull in a diverse group of people. Oh, and here we have the state auditor who just came in the nick of time. But I do want you to know that this truly has been the beginning point of a journey that we think is going to have a far-reaching impact on what we will be doing. Mr. Chair, this is our state auditor, Rebecca Otto. She's out of breath, but she would love to say hello if that would be all right.
Yes, we don't take general testimony when a bill is standing in division, but if you wanted to make, say hello, that's fine.
Hello, Mr. Chair.
And I assume when you catch your breath, you might want to go a little bit beyond that.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Rebecca Otto, the state auditor, and I just sprinted from my building, so it was a pretty sight going down the street, but I wanted to make sure I was here, and it's, okay.
We have several questions if you want to catch your breath.
Mm-hmm. You have questions?
No, well, members do. Why don't you catch your breath? I can see you're breathing heavy. Representative Simon, were you done? Okay, Representative Houseman.
Ms. Chira and the authors, I wondered, does this, early in the session, the governor of Minnesota and Wisconsin had a joint news conference that had to do with joint purchasing, I thought. Was this effort related in some way to that? That one early on, as I recall, got sort of a negative reaction from the school districts who said we're already doing it. So I wonder what the connection is.
Representative McFarland, you want to comment on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, I think the response is that many people do not want to be adding mandates this year when we're looking at taking away mandates, so we were looking at an alternative way.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things I was noticing when you're talking about procurement here, it's a question about, are you only looking at the bottom line in terms of pricing, or do you also, for example, the example that you have on our packet today has to do with food, and you've got cheese pizza, spaghetti sauce, spicy chickpea. So we have a move towards more local production of foods and making sure that some of the foods that are in our communities, have that and that they're quality food products. So my question is, in the procurement and the idea of reducing costs, are we also looking at the quality and the local sourcing of some of these products as well?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, one of the things that we're very aware of is, and the reaction from the people that we have been talking to over the last several weeks, they want the opportunity to work with local vendors. And the idea of having a mandated approved vendor list is incredibly distasteful around the state of Minnesota because, just as he said, there is that relationship, the concern about quality or knowing a product that someone would have, and local units of government and school districts in particular want to be able to have the control and say over what products are used. but they also would like to have the opportunity by bulk purchasing to be able to really save when they can buy something in quantity like spaghetti sauce. Is that answering your question?
It does. I guess maybe we get more of a conversation after this, but you know, there's locally produced spaghetti sauce and there's globally produced spaghetti sauce, and some might come from our local farmers and others might come from far away, and I'm just thinking about how that would work in the local economy, and that, again, I guess raising the issue beyond pricing, also the support of the local economy.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, once again, this is about local control. We do not want to have to mandate a specific sauce if that's unacceptable, you know. And the other thing is that a locally produced sauce could be recommended and put on the website as a choice. So it is totally, you know, a member input is taken and is available to everyone who accesses the website.
Representative Browning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think what I was going to say has been well covered by the authors of the bill. I just want to underscore that this is a beginning, and they are going to continue on with their working group over the interim and come up with more things. The governor and his press conference, as the governors want to do, has sweeping statements rushing to judgment about what local communities are already doing. And so we had to take a step back and look at honoring what is already done with the best practices website, and then that gives us a good place to start to see what else can be done. But the concerns that Representative Clark has are exactly the sort of thing we don't want to do, mandate some monolithic, universal, the same for every single district when local districts have something better, and we want to share that and then go on with that. And then the last thing I would say is the famous Biskin-Skryling bill is introduced again this year to look at more opportunities for athletics in our communities, having a different way than just 9 or 10 people on one team of a big school, when there could be other models that could be looked at where more students could participate. And they're doing a lot of those kind of things, and if anybody has ideas, please pass them along to these wonderful co-chairs of this working group.
Yeah, we have several people yet that have questions, and then the state auditor wanted to comment. I just was going to remind members we have, after this bill, three more bills and about 45 minutes or a little less. If we're lucky, we won't have to come back tonight, so keep that in mind as we are asking questions. Ms. Otto, did you want to catch your breath now? Okay. Why don't you briefly comment then about your thoughts on the bill?
Briefly, there's a lot of good things going on in local government, Mr. Chair and members, and really it's because of survival. I mean, they have to survive. They have to look for efficiencies in working together, and I believe this effort will help continue that progress and help them share ideas. And I could see it moving into, we can take that information and actually do best practice studies on certain areas to help all entities find the best way to do things. And so I think we all believe that we want good government and efficient government. So this, I believe, goes towards that. The only concern I have is the language on the financing right now says that we may, I think, solicit money from local governments. There's a little bit of concern in my office about the people we audit, we shouldn't be asking for money from. There might be a bit of a conflict there. And so I don't know if, and I haven't had a chance to talk to some of the authors of the bill, but I just got that yesterday. And so I don't know if that could be tweaked to say, I don't know if local government associations are probably better, because then they're more of a, you know, an umbrella organization. But we're not going to be wanting to solicit money from the folks that we oversee, I don't think. So,
I think you make a good point. We do have three more people with questions. Maybe Ms. Novak can take a look at that section.
Mr. Chair, Representative Farland would like to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think we were thinking about the people that were being audited being those people. We were looking at possible foundation or associations to support this.
Is that clear then? The language says you may seek funds from local units of government and non-governmental sources. And I happen to concur with what the auditor is saying there about soliciting from local units of government. If
Mr. Chair, then I would like to move an oral amendment to delete that phrase.
From local units of government?
Yes.
And so then seek funds. I guess we have to leave the from in there. Seek funds from non-governmental sources to establish an online clearinghouse. Ms. Otto, would you be, that solve the problem that you raised, I assume?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that helps quite a bit. And I'm not excited about seeking funds, but I believe the authors will probably be seeking funds. That's what they told me. Because we have so much to do in the office. And so anyway, that's great. That gives us more comfort.
They will be seeking funds from here?
Well,
the well is rapidly depleting. It's pretty dry here. I think
there
are ways and means would concur with me on that.
And Mr. Chair, I'm very aware of that as a state auditor, that it's difficult right now for you all.
Yeah.
And but the authors are feeling as though there are nonprofits and or organizations out there, non-governmental, that would be happy to fund the small dollar amount that it takes for us to do this work.
Okay, the chair moves the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried.
Mr. Chair.
We still have, we'll add you to the last, Representative Lucavina. Representative Kahn is next.
Oh, just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I did notice from your sample pricing that all the money was saved on what looked like really unhealthy foods, high in salt, high in cholesterol. And is it a good service to our school districts to have them buy really rotten food cheaper? Just a rhetorical comment.
This morning we have to be careful how far we wander. We're going to be able to react to some members. Representative Fiskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what we're doing is we are putting into law something that can be done right now. The auditor can do this, and I know the auditor. She's a good person, and she wants efficient government. She can do this. But members, not only are we putting it into law, if you look at the bill, we're putting it into statute. Not session law, we're actually putting this into statute. I think it's a misuse of statute personally, but yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have Representative Rukavina, and then I think we'll take a vote. I was just informed that Representative Easton has a conflict, so we'll take his bill next.
I'll wait until after we vote. I had a question on the office's previous bill. I was out of the room arguing with Representative Garofalo, and I and I had some questions on the commercial driver's license bill, and I'll wait.
Can you wait until we get through the other bills, perhaps?
No, I can't.
Oh, you can't, because I would like to see if we can't get through the agenda so that we don't have to return later today. Okay, any further discussion on the bill then? The motion is renewed, then that House File 1665, the Second Committee on Grossman, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you. And we have Representative Peterson next.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative,
I was hoping while Representative Quayles was here, we could revisit House Bill 1088 if you would reconsider it, because I have some real concerns about the bill as far as what it does to a person if you look at the fiscal notes. But I'll just wait, I guess, till the floor maybe to bring it up then, because I had an amendment and I was outside and I thought my friend over on the other side would have some questions on it, and I came in and found out it was passed.
Well, maybe Ms. Wales can wait a few minutes. I'd like to get Representative Easton's bill done so he can take care of it. He's got to be somewhere else that kind of a session.
Thank you.
Representative Easton.
So I would move. Do we have a division? If he's got back to you, so I'll move House Bill 986 to recommend a pass and refer to the general register.
Okay, and Representative Thiessen, you have an amendment that would put
I do.
The you would like
I'd like to move the AO90555 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment scales down the bill quite significantly. As you can see, much of the other pieces have moved separately. What this does is it relates to the mental health county maintenance effort, and it just allows for, basically what it does is two things. It allows some longer-term planning for the county so that they're not basing their budget on kind of numbers that are coming in concurrently with when they're trying to budget. It lets them use the prior year's budget to set their maintenance of effort amount. And it also allows, if there is a significant reduction in spending on mental health from federal or state sources, so non-county sources they don't have any control over, that their maintenance of effort can be adjusted. It expires at the end of 2011. So it's a short-term issue to address some maintenance of effort issues going forward. And then it sets up a more precise, specific process for dealing with the corrective action plan. So when maintenance of effort isn't met, that's what a corrective action plan does. And so I would ask your support. It's kind of a temporary, Representative Wofford is working on a much larger way to address this issue of maintenance of effort. But this is a narrowly focused. It's worked out generally. We've talked to mental health advocates, to the counties, and to the department, and everybody at least seems to agree that for the short term, this is an appropriate way to deal with these issues.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Grimey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see a nod from the county over there, but I want to see a nod from the mental health advocates before we vote on this, and I see they're busily reading it. So I'm wondering if, I guess I'll ask Representative Thiessen while I'm waiting for them to finish reading it so I can get that nod. It doesn't look like
I think Representative Grayling, nods probably aren't the best. I remember a auditor's report on the Board of Regents, and they were highly criticized for making decisions with a nod. So I think it is appropriate to ask a question of them, and if you want to get their feedback, then they probably should be on the record. Representative Thiessen.
Everybody, we have worked out this language. Everybody does seem to be in agreement with where we're going with this on the short term. And so we have had these meetings. They want to come down and
I think Representative Grayling, just the way she phrased that, would like to be sure and if they could come down and say yes or no. I think you're saying that they'll say yes, but we'll see.
It looks like they were.
Mr. Chairman, Sue Abderholden, now in Minnesota, co-chair of the Legislative Network, and I just was quickly comparing the language, and it does appear to reflect the consensus that we had reached earlier this year.
Okay, very good. Representative Grayling, is that...
Thank you, yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, then Representative Thiessen renews his motion that House File 986, the second engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
No.
thank you. Representative Eastland. Representative Eastland, what's the moment? Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the K-12 Education Finance Division report for House File 1127, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate File 1794 be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm having a letter passed out. This is the genesis of the bill. It was from a Lieutenant Colonel Travis Bowles, who was in the National Guard, called up for service as a teacher, called up for service for a year in Iraq. And he ran into this issue when he was working through his pay differential with his district. And it did not affect him, but he said that it's possible that he could see how this could affect others in the future, and so he recommended that we look at this. And so really the basic issue in this bill is on, if you have it in front of you, is on lines 2.9, 2.10, and 2.11. That's the crux of the bill. The other changes were basically military ease that we added to this bill because it made more sense to the military community. But what the concern here is that when we're dealing with teachers specifically in the military pay differential, calculating the military pay differential, it becomes difficult because teachers earn their salary over a 9-month period, and if it's an annual salary, the ability to earn is really compressed into 9 months. And so in statute, what we have put in here is that teachers have their military pay differential determined by their daily rate of pay, and they're only paid for the number of days that they would have been under contract as teachers. And there was a little bit of confusion on lines 2.10 and 2.9, 2.10 and 2.11, where it kind of oscillated between military daily rate of pay and salary. And so what we've tried to do is clear that language up and make it very clear that what we're talking about is the daily rate of pay, and that's the comparison that we should be using when we're making the determination for teachers receiving this benefit. So it's very straightforward, and we've had really no opposition from anybody on this point, and so I would appreciate your support.
And I understand that issue. I'm a retired teacher, and I understand how that's compressed into the daily rate of pay in the 9 months. Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Representative Champion. Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move Higher Education Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division Report for the House File 644, the first in Grossman.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 644, the first in Grossman, be recommended to pass and placed on general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Champion on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, let me say that this is a bill that has gone through many different policy divisions. It has gone through local government division, government operations, higher education and workforce development, and there's been a lot of discussion around it, and I think a lot of you have also participated in that discussion. This legislation before you is an enabling statute which allows cities or local municipalities to create an ordinance that would require, when they're doing construction contracts or service contracts, to engage local residents or low income, and I intentionally left it open because I want to each place and space in our wonderful city to decide, or state to decide, how they want to craft their ordinance if they were going to enact it. There is no fiscal impact. We had testimony from the Minnesota League of Cities and from a number of different people. In fact, we also had Elizabeth Campbell, who's with Ryan Construction, talks about how this practically works. There was some discussion around whether cities are able to do this right now, and this is a tool to clarify that, because so many cities were unsure if they had the authority by which to do this. And so we wanted to clarify that, provide that, allow them to do it if they want to do it, and then also to craft it so that it makes sense for their local municipality. So I'm asking for your support, because there's no fiscal impact, because it's an enabling statute, and it says may. And I will say this as well, Representative Kip Myers had an opportunity to fully vet this, and if we're going to go down that route again or track again, I'm not sure if that's the best use of our time. And so let me just say that again. Although I appreciate all her wonderful questions, but I hope that we had a chance to really articulate and identify her concerns. But go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, at this point, we'll call for discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
You are on the list. You're the only one on the list. Representative Kissmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, I think in a committee, any member, I think, has the ability to ask a question. Mr. Champion, Representative Champion, I think you've done so. And I think to preemptively take me to task when you don't even know is a little interesting. Nonetheless, you're exempting here. This section does not apply. I just want to clarify, we had some discussion. I'm not quite sure if this language is exactly the same as before. It does exempt contracts between the city and an exclusive representative, meaning that is a union, if I would understand that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, again, as I indicated before, it does not. The only thing it clarifies is if there are existing long-term employment contracts that are in place. We are not seeking to enter that discussion. But when you think in terms of a construction contract that would require PLA, that would still require there to be some consideration, even in those situations, but it's really meant to be inclusive as opposed to being exclusive. And so it doesn't seek to identify any particular group or union and exempt them. It was more to clarify and to make sure that cities know that we're not trying to come in and say if there are employment unions or contracts that they have that we are trying to in any way mess up those contracts or undermine them, let me say that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I have every confidence that cities do look to hire the best people no matter what stratus of level by which they come. And being the oldest of 14 kids from a very poor family, I found that my family was able to be quite competitive in the employment market by our work ethic and things that we did, and so I am sure that they will qualify and the cities will do a good job.
Any further discussion on the bill? Well, seeing none, then Representative Benson. Representative Benson moves that House File 6 renews his motion to House File 644, the first committee engrossment be recommended. Passed and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. That completes the agenda today. And tomorrow we meet again at 8 o'clock. We will not need to meet this evening because we were able to move along quite well this morning. So with that, Lil reminds me, the minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I move the minutes. I read them carefully.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now, that meeting.